This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. We have been live for the last hour in D.C. on 106.7 all over the district in the DMV. We now got to say hello to our audience in Richmond that picks us up every day for 3 hours as well. Danny's in our D.C. studios. I'm out at Meadows Farms Golf Course. I'm hanging out with my buddy Jermon Bushrod at his event today on G&D here on The Fan. And Jermon is kicking it with us for a few minutes. We have pried him away from the golf course. A little respite here in the shade. Danny, I thought we could tap into Jermon on OTAs and on the significance of them, because you and I have waxed poetic quite a bit on Chase Young and what goes on at these events. But why not actually get the expertise of someone who's been a part of organized team activities with various organizations over the years? So I want to start by just asking you this. Almost, I think it's like 98% of the Commanders are at their OTAs.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you point blank. Like, I've made a big deal about the fact that Chase Young is not there, even though they have two other guys that haven't been there. Charles Leno, their left tackle, who's your boy.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with that. Leno's been good for them for a couple years. He knows this offense.
Yep.
That Eric Bieniemy is implementing, because he played in this offense in Chicago that you played in.
Yes.
We can ask you about that. The other guy is Montez Sweat, who plays Chase's position. But Sweat has performed. Like, he hasn't been what we necessarily want him to be, 10, 12 sacks.
Right.
But it's 8, it's 9 sacks, it's production, it's quarterback hits. My problem with Chase is injury last year. Slow rehab and recovery, not his own fault, serious injury. But it's been a disappointment. You would think he's chomping at the bit in a contract year after the team didn't pick up his option to go work out.
Right.
When you hear that he's not there as a former player, you may have a different perspective. What do you think about that?
I think, you know, when guys don't show up at OTAs, obviously, in a situation like Chase's, one of his teammates, I think that would be pretty frustrating. And I can kind of sympathize with you a little bit on that, and I can be very understanding of why it can be frustrating, because this is a guy who has shown flashes of being a decent player, but then, you know, you get the injury bug and things happen. The team doesn't, like you were saying, the team doesn't pick up your fifth-year option, and you want to be around the facility. You know, is this a place that you want to be? Like, are you all in to what this team is doing? Are you trying to be a contributing factor? So I think as a player, especially on the outside looking in, I would think it would be frustrating for some of his peers that are there. And what kind of message are you sending to the team? What kind of message are you sending, one, to the guys you got to line up just beside, and to the front office?
So, Jermon, a lot of people will yell back when I say stuff like you just said, that it's voluntary. And if they asked you to do something at your job that was voluntary, would you do it? And, like, you know, they use a lot of crying emojis for some reason.
Right.
I've had jobs that I don't care about. I was a government contractor. I would not have done that.
Right.
I care about this job a lot.
Yes.
And if I wasn't doing very good, and if I was in danger of being released, or, you know, if we hadn't been very successful and Grant and I hadn't just finished number one in the first quarter. Sorry, I'm just stretching to pat myself on the back real quick. But, like, had we not done that, like, the morning show on our station is the Sports Junkies. They've been doing this for 25 years. They should never do a single optional thing ever at any point in time. They've made it. I have not made it. If there's something that I need to be doing, I should be there. I just think there's a disconnect there. And I wonder, like, as a guy that was, again, around so much and was a veteran on some of these teams, would he be someone that you'd reach out to and be like, listen, dude, this is not the way to go about it?
I think that some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball, I'm pretty sure have tried to communicate that with him and let him understand the type of message that it sends, again, not just to the players, but to the front office. Are you all in? Do you want to be a Commander? Like, what are you trying to do? Are you all in with this team? So, if he is away from OTAs right now and he comes back stronger and he has a really good year, then this conversation, you know, doesn't really matter.
Let me ask you that. If you're his teammate and he comes back, he has an awesome camp, preseason, whatever, but, like, 2.5 sacks in week 1, 5 sacks in the first 4 games, don't care anymore that he wasn't there.
Because
right?
at the end of the day, it's about what are you doing in practice? How are you making yourself better? How are you making the team better? And when it's time to strap it up on game day, are you being productive and are you being available? That's all that matters. So if he's not at OTAs and he's not available and he's not getting the production, you know, the message is loud and clear, in my opinion.
Would a teammate ever get involved in someone else's business to say, hey, man, where are you? Or does that not really happen?
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure some of the older guys are just, you know, are reaching out just to make sure that, one, he's okay as a player, because at the end of the day, we care about, you know, each other, and we understand the type of stress physically, mentally, and emotionally that comes with playing the game of professional football. So it's, you know, I guess we really got to wait to training camp to really give our full judgment and our full opinion, because then you'll see if the actions that he took right now actually paid off.
And I'm sorry to just kind of keep hammering this, Jermond, but my college coach, I wasn't a pitcher, but my pitching coach, he called all the pitches, okay, for our pitching staff. The catcher would look over him and he'd relay signs, and that's what he wanted you to throw. His point always was, if you shake, like the pitcher's allowed to shake it off because I don't want to throw a curveball, I want to throw a changeup or fastball, whatever. You're allowed to shake. It better be nasty. It better be the best version of that you've ever thrown, because I've studied the scouting reports. I've done all this other kind of stuff. You think you know better than me, that's fine. Right. I just wouldn't want to leave the question. I wouldn't want to leave the out. Like, what if you don't have a great game or a great month or a great season? Then pudgy idiots like me get to ask all the questions and scream Tom Blue in the face. Why? It seems so easy and controllable just to show up. Like, that's the part that I just can't get past, is that it's such an easy thing to do.
Right. Right. It's easy to just to show your face. But again, Danny, I just think that this will be a great conversation to have week two, week three, just to see how he's evolving, see how he's moving, because I can give a little insight, you know, while we're sitting here. You know, I was a scout for the Saints for a year. They gave me that opportunity, and I had a chance to watch his film. And, you know, when I see a guy who, if he just finished a little bit better, he would have turned three or four pressures into sacks. And then you're having a total different conversation sitting up here about why he's missing OTA. So
when you watched him, you saw, like, was it special? Were the traits elite?
I mean, first off, he has prototype size. What is 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, he's huge.
Like, long arms. He has the weight. He really brings it. I think he uses his hands decent. I think, you know, consistency. And the number one thing in the NFL is availability. Can you be on the field? I've seen a guy that can generate pressure. I've seen a guy that can be around the quarterback. I do think he just needs to finish a little bit better, and I just think he needs to be available more. And that comes with, you know, obviously hoping that you don't catch the injury bug. I mean, some people are lucky in that aspect. You know, I went years without having any major injuries, but some guys have to deal with that now, and you have to figure out a better way to take care of your body. So I hope that whatever he is doing, it's benefiting him so that he is a better player on the field, because at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Jermond Bushrod on Grant and Danny, longtime NFL offensive lineman. So when you were a left tackle, what is more difficult to stop and to block? Or is it different for everyone? Like, Chase is a strength guy, and he's fast and he's big.
He's explosive.
Totally. But there's not, like, he's not a bend guy. He's not like you know, I always called it like a motorcyclist dragging his knee around the corner. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really have that. Mm-hmm. Like, what gave you fits, and what was – when you had a matchup where you're like, okay, I'm better with this, was it just the big, strong guy, like an Arakpo that would run into you? Yeah.
I enjoyed playing guys who I knew exactly how they wanted to have their success. You know, speaking of Arakpo, I mean, you're talking about a power guy. But he had a little bend, but he's going to set you up with the power first, you know. When you're playing guys who – you know, really do a great job of maximizing their potential on, like, three moves, but they make those initial moves look the same. You know, I grew up in the era of playing your Freenies, your Wares, your John Abrahams, where their first two or three steps, these guys, you don't know if they're going to hit you with power, inside, or bend around the corner. There's some guys that you go out and you know exactly what they're trying to do. You know exactly how they're trying to rush, because they stand up. You know, they give you a good target to hit. So, you know, as you are getting, like, as a professional, it's really about figuring out what you are good at. And then, you know, those good things, what you're good at can turn into great things, but you have to continue to keep honing in on those skills and not just being predictable.
Did you have a move that someone would do against you that was just your kryptonite?
You know, as much as I weighed, you know, when I played, I hated bull rushers. I hated it.
And, really?
And, yeah, I hated speed to power. So, you know, what I would do, especially in my younger years, I would play a little bit more aggressive. I would try to, you know, use my athletic ability to, you know, go and cover up guys. And I got a lot better at defending bull rushes later on in my career because I understood how to, you know, better use my technique just be really in tune with my body and understand how to move properly. But in my younger years, I couldn't stand getting bull rushed. So, you know, I would be athletic. You know, I was quote unquote, I was an athletic guy who would struggle with power at times. But the way that I would minimize that is that I would go get my hands on you first. I'm going to go attack you first.
Commanders have four new offensive linemen potentially that are gelling now this offseason to try to protect what is essentially a rookie quarterback in Sam Howell going into his second season from North Carolina. It feels to me like the O-line, there's no position on the field where everyone's got to be on the same page to the extent that you guys do. When you got 80% of the O-line reworked, I mean, how much time could that take them this offseason to gel, and how closely should we be tracking that here in camp in the preseason?
That's the number one key to this team's success. I think, you know, I might be a little biased, but I think that's always the number one key. How are you going to, protect your quarterback? How are you going to, you know, be on the same page in the run game, making sure that you guys are comfortable with each other? You know, time on task is big, Grant, when you're an offensive lineman, and playing together, just understanding how the person beside you plays. If you're a center, you got to know how both guards play. If you're a tackle, you got to know how the guard beside you plays. So it's really about just gelling together, being in that playbook. These OTA reps, those are extremely important, especially talking about, you know, from the offensive line standpoint. So if you're talking about, you know, four new guys in there, it could take some time. But if these guys have good technique and you have good coaching and you have good scheme and good understanding about what needs to be done, it might take a few weeks to get it going. But when you get it going, that offensive line can carry you.
Jermaine, this just occurred to me while you were talking. When you actually have all those things that you're talking about, right? When you've got the familiarity, when you got the rhythm, and you understand intuitively where a guy's going to be instead of thinking about it, right? Mm-hmm. And you've also got some familiarity with an offensive system. Have there been times when you've been in a game where you're almost like in rhythm with the offensive coordinator, where you're going, I know he ran this just now, but I bet you this is next, and you hear the play call, and it's like everybody's in part of the symphony. Have you ever had kind of moments like that, or is it always sort of, I have no idea what's coming next, and I'm just so tired, I don't even care?
No, I mean, and I think that's a part of good coaching, you know, making sure that you are showing your guys how you're going to attack this defense. You know, you can't go into every game with the same mindset, the same concept. You know, you got to understand what the other teams are good at and what you're good at. So you got to put your players in the best position possible for them to go out there and succeed. And when you have a good coach who's just – calling, listen, I'm an offensive lineman. I want to run the ball. I want play action. I don't mind seven steps. I don't mind five steps. But let's be balanced. Let's keep the other guys guessing. You know, that's what it's about for me. So as an offensive lineman, you know, when you're talking about offensive lineman and coaching, it's really just about being successful early on so that these coaches feel confident opening up that playbook a little bit. That's important. You know, as a coach, they got a lot riding on their shoulders. You know, it's a performance-based business. And if the guys up front aren't getting it done early, then, you know, sometimes they don't stick to the game plan.
Jermaine Bushrod, couple of time Pro Bowler, former Super Bowl champion, with us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. One of your longtime coaches, Sean Payton, is back in the NFL in Denver after a quick little respite. Weird. It's going to be so strange to see him not in New Orleans, right? I mean, for years wearing that gear on the sideline. He's linking up with Russell Wilson. I think that's a fascinating tandem after Russ had a really disappointing year last year.
Right.
I mean, he looked No, not it wasn't let Russ cook. He looked cooked. And now Sean Payton.
Reheat Russell.
Right. Reheat Russell. That's what it, hashtag reheat Russell.
You better trademark that.
Sean Payton is trying to fix him. Number one, what makes him such a good coach? From the outside looking in anyway. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
The details.
Are you surprised he came back? Those would be my two things on Payton.
Sean is he's a football guy. He loves it. He lives it. He breathes it. You know, when you have opportunity to be around a guy, not just in playing, but, you know, I was on the scouting side. I was on the coaching side for a year. Just to see his mind work, and then you see the relationship that he's had with one of the best quarterbacks of all time in Drew Brees, and he gets to bring that type of mindset to Denver and have that rub off on Russell Wilson. They got a good solid defense. I don't know much about the offensive line, but they're specialists. They got some good players on the outside. And it's Sean's first year, and I know how Sean was when he first got to New Orleans. I was there during his second year, and, man, he expects a lot. He expects a lot out of you, and I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, for me to go to an organization like that and be around coaching like that, that you're going to get, they're going to spend a lot of time making sure that you're buying in, because if you don't buy in, you're not going to have an opportunity to play up there. So I'm excited to see what Sean does in Denver. But yeah, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to.
Stay the retirement away life is not for him. Doesn't hurt that he got. What did he get, Danny? Close to $20 million a year, I think?
All of it, I think, yeah. Something to that effect.
That doesn't hurt either.
I mean, listen, I'm getting off the couch for that, too. But, yeah, I mean, listen, it's football, man. This is what he's been doing all his life. He's been doing it for a very long time. He was very successful in New Orleans. I mean, I won one Super Bowl there, but, I mean, it was two, three other opportunities that he could have came home with one. So I'm excited for him. You know, the city of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana was definitely bummed to see him go because, you know, he brought a lot. He brought a lot to that city and to that organization. He was a part of the change, and we were part of something special. So, you know, best of luck to him in Denver.
Did you like the guy that was going to be all over you, or did you like the players' coach? What do players respond to these days? You guys are all pros, and you've seen it all. You've had everybody that
might have even changed.
I'll choose you out, or somebody that's just austere. What did you look for?
I'll say this: I coach little kids now,
yeah.
In football, a little bit in basketball, and every player is different, right? Every kid responds a different way. Every professional athlete responds a different way. When I was younger. It's funny because I was just talking about this earlier. When I was younger, Sean, you know, you made a mistake. He's the guy that he's going to chew you out. He's going to have the beady eyes looking at you. He's going to make sure that he's grilling you and that you feel him staring you down. He might come over and chew you out. But that's in my earlier years. As I got to be, you know, listen, I made a couple Pro Bowls. I know what I'm doing out here. So you don't have to take that approach with me anymore. So I just think it's different. I think you got to motivate certain guys in certain ways. I had a knack for wanting to be at my best. And as I started to stack years and stack plays and stack games under my belt, I had a lot of expectations of myself. So I didn't need a coach breathing down my neck every time something didn't go wrong. I know the mistakes that I made. I'm a professional. You know, I played the game until I was in my low 30s. So, you know, I discipline my kids. I don't need a coach disciplining me as I get older. It's just about understanding, being transparent. You know, at the end of the day, players want a coach that can be transparent. Tell me what you like. Tell me what you don't like. Tell me what I need help with. Coach me up at the end of the day because you are a teacher, right? So you can yell, but constructive. You know, constructive criticism is always the best way to, you know, teach.
As he was saying that, Danny, I was thinking about Urban Meyer in Jacksonville.
Right.
And what a fiasco that was because guys were going, hey, dude, I'm not a college kid.
Right.
Treat me like a man. I'm a man.
Right.
I'm not a college kid. Jermon Bushrod with us here on GND on the Fan. Appreciate you, brother. Good hanging. Good talking ball.
Listen, I could do this. Grant, you might have to call me. You know, you can call me. That's right. Me, dude. Listen, I do a little bit of coaching, but I got some time from around, 2 to 6:30. I got some time.
We don't have that Sean Payton bread, though, that if you're looking for that. We don't
have
that.
Tens of dollars, Jermon.
No, I don't need the bread. Just, you know.
We'll give you
just
a bag of chips and
I don't know about coffee. A bag of chips, but, you know, treat me to a little dinner every now and then.
All
I'll
right.
Come up to D.C. You know, I'm in the DMV a decent amount. So
steak. You know, we'll get you some steak.
Steak, a little sushi. I know y'all got some good restaurants in D.C. D.C.
Couple
so.
King George Hall of Famers chopping it up right there. I love it. Privileged to watch it on the Zoom just now.
One that actually earned his Hall of Fame nod. And I was here, too. That waters down your Hall of Fame nod a little bit when they invite
you. I was
guys,
just at the high school the other day. I was showing
– How's
show
my plaque look?
It looked very good. It's good. Up there. It's beside mine, you know.
There
so, you know, we're both up there, you know. Don't
How does my
don't sell yourself
look?
Short.
Cut that one, Danny. You'll like that.
Did you hear him? Listen, how does my plaque look? Come on.
Did you
now.
Shine it up? Was it nice?
Grant and Danny with you on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30 today.
That's great.
We will be winning off the field at 3:45.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to the show. Danny's in our D.C. studios. I'm out at Meadows Farms Golf Course in Orange at Jermon Bushrod's Visualize and Rise event. Buddy of mine from NKG, who's got several of his former teammates and longtime friends from the league hanging out. And Danny, I just found Usama Young, who is stopping by to chat with us, who played in the National Football League, a D.C. native, had close to double-digit interceptions over a few seasons, and is now doing some incredible work with the National Football League. I wanted to ask him about because he's got a really important job. He is the Senior Manager Player Engagement and Relations. And I asked him, so what are you working on? And the programs include financial literacy, instructing players on fatherhood and social justice initiatives, like some really high-level, important, off-the-field things that maybe don't always come up but that are really, really significant. So, first of all, thank you very much for the time and stopping by, Osama. We appreciate it.
Man, thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to be here today.
It's cool. It's a cool experience, by the way, for you guys out playing some golf, hanging out with celebrities like Grant. Right? Isn't that a big deal?
It's amazing. It's an amazing experience. You mentioned Grant. That's the highlight of the day right there.
King George Hall of Famer, dude.
No doubt. Yes, indeed.
That's hilarious. I mentioned the important work you're doing, though. I want to start with some of the financial literacy programs.
Yes.
We hear all the time about, sadly, this player, this documentary happened about bad decisions. This player bought into this thing and got scammed. We don't always hear about some of the good stuff people like you are doing. Can you just give us an idea of like what you're counseling players on and how that works to make sure that those documentaries don't happen anymore?
You know, that's the toughest part. You know, as people, we tend to err toward the negative. You know, when we hear all those negative stories, we hear about Broke is the documentary that you're alluding to.
I remember it, yep.
The ESPN study, I don't know how many, the percentage of guys that go broke after they exit the league. And we're like, yo, that is false. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily tied to how many guys actually do things that are great when they exit the league. And in my position right now, I support guys when they exit. I support guys in understanding of budgeting, understanding of credit, taxes, and investing. So when I do know that it's tough when you're the first generation of wealth, you get a first, second, third, fourth round draft, and you do get a large sum of money. It's one of those things that immediately all the media, all the fandom, it goes towards you. And I understand how much pressure goes into that, but I also understand that, you know what, it's a level of guys, it's a number of guys that do make very, very intelligent decisions when it comes to investing, when it comes to supporting their families and all the other individuals that have supported them on their way to the NFL. I'm fortunate to hit the lottery twice. I was drafted as a pick 66 to the NFL. And then I was able to, once I transitioned after 9 years of playing in the NFL, to transition to the league office and support guys in their transition from the league. So I'm able to support guys and prevent those stories that we hear about of guys going broke, and also support guys like we're here today, visualizing Rise, Jermon Bushrod, his family, the foundation, giving back to the community, the people that have reared him into success in the NFL and beyond.
Largo's own Usama Young with us here on G&D. So this is the thing that I've always thought, Usama, and I want to get your take on this. You're basically talking about the elite 1/1,000,000th of 1% of athletes on the planet, you guys that are able to play in the NFL. There's got to be a degree of, I'm the baddest dude in the room every time I go anywhere, right? There's got to be this feeling of invincibility that you play this high injury rate game where you can't think about consequences in a lot of ways. You can't show weakness or feel like this might end. And what you're asking people to do, not you personally, but one is asking people to do is say, hey, prepare for when this is over. And your whole mindset and mantra just to make the league, it's not about being over. It's about, I belong here. I am not weak. I'm the strongest you could possibly be. And I think that's actually an underrated challenge for folks. Yeah. Is that something you encounter, and how do you deal with that?
Man, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because right when you were talking, a guy named Torrey Smith, he comes in front of me, and I look at him, and I'm like, yo, this is a cat that was out of the University of Maryland, Virginia native, and he proved all odds. You know, he was one of those guys that was, you know what, we're going to count him out. But he's like, nah, I got the drive, I got the will, I got the determination, and we're going to make it work. So when I'm looking at a cat like him, I'm like, you know what? This guy, not only is he going to make it in the league, but he's going to make it beyond the league, because he not only understands his level of understanding on the field, but off the field as well. So when I get into my position at the league office, I want to support guys in that understanding. You know what? This league, NFL is National Football League, but it also stands for not for long. We don't know how long we're going to play. And most of the time, a lot of guys want to compare it to the NBA, to the MLB, where, hey, look, one thing that's for sure in football is you're going to get hurt. And eventually, you're going to be done. Whether you play for 5 years or you play for 15 years, it's one of those things that I always say, and I see a guy like Torrey, and immediately he caught my eye, and I'm like, you know what? Let me make sure that this dude is taking care of himself, but also the folks around him, and understanding the position that he's in, and understanding the level of not just him playing professionally, but how much he can impact outside of the game of football. Because most of the time, as fans, we see these guys going out as gladiators. I was one of the cats that pushed through injuries. I had pulled hamstrings. I had broken bones. I had dislocations that I fought through. And next thing you know, when I'm done, it's like, hey, what's next? What's next for me? And what's next for those around me? How can I shape the environment around me, the neighborhood that I came up in? You talked about PG County. I'm from Largo High School. We had one cat. That was me in the last 20 years that was drafted.
King George High School in Jermon.
Straight up. So we had 20 years of guys that played football that wanted to make it to the league, and I was the first one that went to Kent State. I was a third-round draft pick, pick 66, and I made it, and I'm like, you know what? I got to pour into my community, and not just myself. And then after I'm done, I got to understand that I got family that I want to pour into as well. So I think overall it's one of those things that I admire when I come back to a golf event like I'm attending right now, and I see guys that are pouring into their communities that understand the big game around them and not just the game inside.
Well, I appreciate the time. You're doing great work. Thank you for stopping through, and it's good catching up with you.
No doubt, man. I thank y'all. I appreciate the opportunity. Visualize and Rise, always doing amazing things every year. I love to be a part of it.
Usama Young, who played at the end of his career with the Raiders in Oakland. Next time we catch up, I want to ask you about the move out to the Vegas. But those poor Oakland fans, man, they lose the Raiders,
yep.
Danny.
I got nothing.
Now they're losing the A's. They already had the Warriors go from Oakland to San Francisco as well. Yeah, crazy.
It's tough, man.
And it wasn't like nothing but expansion teams. They're teams with history. Raiders were champions. Those A's teams, both of the 70s and then of the late 80s. It's a crime they only won one World Series with as good as they were. They were great at everything. the number of 20-game winners, the Bash brothers, Ricky Henderson in his prime. Just amazing history for all of these teams in that town. And it's not hip. It's not cool. There's always sort of been a better deal and a better option for owners, so they've always taken it. And it ain't fair to those fans.
The images of what that ballpark could look like, though, in Vegas, no one in Oakland wants to hear this, but they're probably not listening on the Odyssey app. That ballpark looks fire. And I've been in the Coliseum. It's gross.
Oh, it's terrible.
I mean, the right thing is happening probably. It's sad for that fan base, but I think the right thing's probably going down.
I wonder how that'll go in Vegas. My one of my good buddies played AAA baseball in Vegas, and his ERA was inflated. A, because, you know, he probably wasn't a big leaguer, but B.
Well, that ballpark is like the hitterist, friendliest ballpark that's ever ballparked.
And that's that. You know, the Pacific Coast League in general, I think you got a few of those, but that one especially was a lot of big crooked numbers. A lot of, like, normal ERAs squared in that place. So I wonder how it's going to go.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Danny's in our D.C. studios. I'm out at Meadows Farms Golf Course. Torrey Smith is here. We're going to catch up with the two-time Super Bowl champ in just a moment right here on G&D on the Fan. Grant and Danny on the Fan. You're locked into 106.7. Nats baseball tonight at 7:05. Charlie and Dave pregame at 6:30. And we are taking you up to 6:30 right here on G&D in D.C. and in Richmond. Danny found another of our dignitaries out here today, one of these celebs walking around playing golf who's given us a couple minutes, very kind of a multi-time Super Bowl champ. Had a heck of a career with the Ravens, San Francisco, Philly, Carolina. Played for Ron Rivera. Torrey Smith is with us here on G&D. Another guy, we talk about, you know, some of the local youngsters done well. I mean, Torrey Smith makes this area very, very proud. Awesome to see you again. How are you?
Yeah, nice seeing you as well, man. All is well.
I just asked you before you came on about the end of your career in Carolina. I think it was like 11 games, and it was with Rivera at the time. You know, with the Panthers, and I asked you what you thought of Ron. It sounds like you're a big fan of Rivera's.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Coach Rivera. You know, I think when I've had a lot of coaches over my lifetime, and to me the best coaches are the ones that help you grow on and off the field. I think he has a special gift to that. I think he's very transparent and honest with the players, and that's something that always stood out to me, having a coach that has your back, you know, the one that you trust when things get hard. And you know, he's definitely one of my favorite coaches that I've had, you know, in my career.
Yeah, Torrey, what did you prefer? Did you like he's almost like everybody's dad, it feels like, Ron Rivera is. You know what I mean? Like he's authoritative but also very relatable, and he's the guy that wants to be there when you open the college acceptance letter, but he's also got some expectations. Or did you like the taskmaster, or, you know, the player's coach that wants to shoot pool with you, like anywhere in between? How did you feel? What did you want?
Yeah, I felt like you know, I would say he's a player's coach, but only in a sense of the players like him.
Yeah.
Like, if that makes sense.
It does.
Because he goes out. I mean, he's a definitely authoritative figure. He has standards. And if you don't reach them, things will change, right? You're going to be held accountable for that as a player, whether that's your playing time getting reduced or other different type of punishments. So it's like he has that balance when you talk about a father figure. But to me, you respect it more because it's coming from a place like we can speak to our parents or teachers or whatever authoritative person or leader that we've been around. You respect it more when you like a person and you truly feel like they have your best interest in mind. And I think that he's one of the best coaches that I've been around, you know, due to his brains for sure, but even bigger in a cultural way.
You mentioned culture. I'm curious because I think of you first with the Ravens, obviously, in some huge seasons, right? 11 touchdowns. You led the league in receiving in San Francisco, though. And at the end of your career, you played in Philly and in Carolina. And you traveled enough. Is each organization, is the culture and the philosophy similar? Because I watch Hard Knocks every year. That's like my inside. And it right. does seem like it's the same kind of messaging, but each team has their own way of doing it. Like, can you notice right away, like, oh, we do it different here. What is that like?
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm playing at Maryland. Coach Friedgen, Coach Franklin on the offensive side of the ball, James Franklin up at Penn State now. They helped kind of establish like a culture of what it looked like to win and to have a standard of excellence in terms of how you prepare, right? So for me, going right into the Baltimore Ravens, I was spoiled by that. That standard was there. Coach Harbaugh has a great culture, and the Ravens as a whole have always been an organization that's been big on culture and discipline. And the best cultures come from not only the coaches but the players as well. So we had that there. Then I went to San Francisco. Amazing organization at the top. Our culture was awful, right? And I would say it's not even necessarily from the coaches and what they were trying to deliver. It was about the dudes that were in the locker room.
Really?
And that's just being completely honest. You know, for
who
me,
was the coach there? I should know that.
I played with Coach Jim Tomsula, and I played with Chip Kelly. And I love Chip Kelly. I actually see him in 2 weeks. All right? But I think if you don't have – I think people oftentimes, like, coaches are responsible for certain things, right? Coaches are responsible for setting the culture and the tone of that team. But if you have players that don't have the ability to lead, that don't have the ability to follow – and don't hold themselves to a certain standard, you're fighting a losing battle. It's like the same way you can't blame every parent for their child doing dumb things, right? Like, that doesn't mean that they have bad parents. You have kids sometimes that just flat out don't listen. And I was able to see that in San Francisco. And then you go to Philly, and it felt like Baltimore, right? Then I went to Carolina, and what he was trying to preach felt like, you know, like it was in those other places. So it can look different ways, but the most important thing when it comes to being a successful environment and culture that I've seen from my experience is that you have to be a team that everyone's all in. It can't be a situation where the players feel like they're certain entitled players. Everyone has to be pulling the rope in the same direction. Everyone has to respect the coaches and be comfortable with the game plan and the things that they're putting into place and the standards that you're going to be held accountable for things, right? And I think Coach Rivera did a great job of doing that when I was in Carolina. I mean, we were 6-1 or whatever it was, and then Cam got his shoulder blasted by T.J. Watt, changed the whole thing. Cam's shoulder doesn't get hurt. Ron's probably still in Carolina.
I was going to say, he might have had a couple more years.
You know what I mean?
There.
Like, we were a really good team at that time. But, I mean, again, it's all about what you do now. And I love Coach. I think he's going to do a great job this season, and I hope they get back to winning.
That's the voice of a guy that scored 41 touchdowns in the NFL, Torrey Smith, with us here on G&D. Torrey, was there ever a team that you were on, kind of thinking about just what you were talking about, got me thinking about it, where you guys were in the offseason practicing or maybe even training camp, OTAs, mini camps, kind of the way your calendar works, and you thought, this team is going to be really good, and then you weren't? Did you ever have it kind of go the other way where you think your expectations were that you guys had it and then you weren't particularly good at all?
Yeah, San Francisco. I thought we sucked a little bit in the offseason, but then we kind of started getting it together, like building like you're supposed to, right? The beginning of the first offseason workout isn't supposed to look like the last day of training camp, right? You're building up. And then we would go, and if you go look in 2015 and 16, whatever 2 years it was, we blew out the Rams on Monday Night Football on a night game 2 years in a row. And I'm like, yeah, we about to got to go on a run. And I don't think we won anything else since, right? And we were awful. But then
this team being that. Y'all were 2-14.
Yeah, we sucked. Yes.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, we started off 1-0, one of the best 1-0 teams you've ever seen in your life, right? But I think to be completely honest, like when you talk about the expectation, to me, it started to boil down to starting to recognize what do good disciplined teams look like, right? And that's when I started to recognize a difference in the winning teams in Baltimore that I had been on. Like, you like, all right, one time it's a mistake. A couple times, you know, it's a problem. Right. And I think that we were starting to experience that. And that was my first time being able to visually see, like, wait, if we keep doing this same thing over and over, shooting ourselves in the foot, we're the problem. Right. Like, we stink. That's a part of being a bad team. And so disciplined teams and winning teams don't do that. So you have to make sure that you're applying the things that you're working on and looking great in practice and looking great in the offseason, and you're getting it done on Sundays.
Your final year in the league when you were in Carolina, he was with a bunch of faces now here in D.C. I mentioned Ron Rivera. Taylor Heinicke was, like, on that practice squad, I think, played in a game. He, of course, became the starter here. He's now out. But Curtis Samuel, and that transitions me into this wide receiver room. Washington's pretty loaded. I just want to get your thoughts as now an analyst looking at this. McLaurin, who PFF just ranked number 8 at wide receiver in the NFL. Jahan Dotson blew me away last year as a first-round pick. He was undersized. I thought he was a slot corner. He can get off the line and make every play on the outside. Really impressive. and then your former teammate Samuel. It's been a disappointing couple years trying to just stay healthy, but as a third guy now, moving him around, they got a chance to be really good at receiver.
Yeah, I love the Washington offense. When you talk about Terry McLaurin himself, I think he's one of the more underrated receivers in the league. I think he can do everything. He's a people love to say number one wide receiver. I hate that term. But he's a guy that can
do. Why
do
you hate that term?
Because I think when you put a label on something as just a number one wide receiver, then everyone else isn't capable of being a guy, right? Like, when people say number one wide receiver, it doesn't mean, like, there are plenty of people that go over 1,000 yards, and people wouldn't necessarily say, oh, they're a number one receiver based on these standards that people put out. Like, what does it matter? Is he producing? That's the question you should ask yourself. Now, I think people, fans, analysts, everyone falls in love with, oh, they don't have a number one receiver. I played on two Super Bowl winning teams. Neither one had a 1,000-yard receiver. So did we not have a number one receiver? And we both had high-powered offenses.
Right.
Like, what does it boil down to, right? So that's why, to me, it doesn't make any sense. But going back to that room, I think when you talk about Jahan Dotson, I knew he was going to be awesome. Watching him at Penn State, he has a great ability to attack the ball and track the ball down the field. And then Curtis Samuel, I remember when he was in Carolina, we were there together. He has the best ability of any player that I've ever been around of speed and quickness. Right, he's like a cat. You can hand it to him. He can play like a running back. He's not afraid to block. Yeah, he runs every route extremely well. He's explosive. Like I said, the only thing that's gotten in his way is health, and he looks great right now. I'm excited for him. Love that kid to death, and I think he's going to have a big year. And you got those three, all three players that are all completely different, but they can all do the same things. You can hand the ball to all of them, right? They all have a background in touching the football that way. You can do screens to them. Like, they can make plays on their own. Like, there's so many different things that you can do as an offensive coordinator, which I'm excited to see what Eric Bieniemy does with those guys, just simply getting the ball in their hands and letting them go to work. So when you have a young quarterback that you're trying to break in, you're able to make his job a whole lot easier. And then I wouldn't be surprised if Washington's offense is a lot more successful this year than people from the outside think.
Torrey, does Dotson remind you of anybody that used to play in the league, used to wear number 82?
Not really. I think he's better, man. I think he's better. If he's talking about me, you know, I think he does everything extremely well. You know, I think he has great speed. You know, his demeanor, man. He's a great leader, great young leader.
Have you ever talked to him?
I did.
I
went to practice last year. Coach Rivera let me come on up, and I was just watching. I'm coaching youth football now, so I'm trying to learn something. But I went on out there, and I was watching, and I just talked to him. I'm like, man, he's a pro. Right, that's a such thing, and that comes from knowing the way he was prepared in college, and that hit home to me because I was kind of groomed by Coach Lee Hall, who's now at Delaware State, but also Coach James Franklin, and teaching you how to be a pro. And Jahan, right away, if you close your eyes and you were at a random practice and they had no numbers on him and you were looking around, you say, that kid's a pro. He knows what he's doing. He's practicing hard. He's finishing plays. He's practicing to get better. And those habits, either you have them or you don't. You can grow into it. Right, but I think for him to be a pro stepping in right away, there's no secret as to why he had such a great year right away.
Last one real quick. I'll let you go on this. I know you got stuff you got to go run and do. If I was a GM and I brought you in like to help me evaluate receivers before the draft, what's the biggest separator at this position no one seems to be able to really get right all the time between the guys that make it and the guys that don't? Like, we see first-round picks that flop. We see fifth-round picks become stars. If you could boil it down, like, hey, I think from my time in the league, the reason some guys are great and others don't pan out at that position specifically, I don't know if it's a skill like route running or something else. Like, what would you say it is?
I mean, that's a great question because, you know, receivers are like you walk into a grocery store and they have a bunch of different flavors, right? And just because one person may not do one thing well doesn't mean they can't excel in this league. There's a role for everybody within an offense. But to me, I think it boils down, and what I've seen, the guys that struggle – typically, it's a mental thing, and I think we underrate that. So if you're a guy that isn't necessarily mentally tough, able to handle adversity, able to handle the Washington media, right, or whatever it may be, able to handle struggling, able to handle slumps, right, if you have that and you're struggling to learn the playbook, that confidence will take you out every single time. And I think people underrate how much having a guy that can be resilient means to a team over time and ultimately their success, because it's hard to find any receiver out there that hasn't had to overcome anything. That's for any player, any person in life, really, right? You're going to have to overcome things and be able to be counted on, but also a person that's committed to getting better, because there are a lot of people that get to the league, they're complacent, and they're not doing those little things that they need to continue to grow and to find a role on their team.
Torrey Smith's not wearing his two rings today, but they're tucked away somewhere. He's got them. Thank you for the time. We appreciate you.
I appreciate y'all having me.
Absolutely. Be good. There's Torrey Smith on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Your Beltway Blitz comes your way next.